First, we go to an issue, a place, and a conundrum, which perhaps best embodies our difficulty with the issue of deciding what is justice in 2013. That conundrum has a name, Gitmo, and the inmates at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility, most of whom are on hunger strike this week, are the unanticipated consequences of the War on Terror, a facility over which an American flag flies but exists in a constitutional netherworld, a facility President Obama believes should be closed. Here is the president speaking earlier this week.
I've asked my team to review everything that's currently being done in Guantanamo, everything that we can do administratively, and I'm going to re-engage with Congress to try to make the case that this is not something that's in the best interest of the American people.
Joining us now to talk about that conundrum of Guantanamo Bay is Jeffrey Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University Law School. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about if we're going to define what justice is in America, what about what is going on at Guantanamo Bay, what is unresolved at Guantanamo Bay, is the opposite of justice as we've come to understand it in the United States, if that's even a question that can be phrased?
It's an excellent question. And if it's possible to imagine what the opposite of justice would be, it'd be harder to come up with a better example than Guantanamo. The opposite of justice is a legal no man's land where people are held indefinitely without charge, without opportunity for release or prosecution, and without any sense of when they might be eligible for release or transfer or prosecution. The fact that 166 detainees continue to languish there has to be a dramatic example of injustice.
Broadly speaking, when we think about the War on Terror and the Guantanamo Bay symbol of the consequences of the War on Terror, how did we get into this mess? I mean, do legal scholars, are they in agreement that on some level certain aspects of the Constitution were simply tossed out the window in the fearful aftermath of September 11th?
I think the answer to that is yes. Guantanamo is a symbol or a representation tangibly of what happens when not only one but two administrations attempt to avoid legal and constitutional accountability. That's why it was set up in the first place. Guantanamo Bay was chosen because the Bush administration predicted inaccurately that the Supreme Court would not view Guantanamo as under constitutional restrictions at all. The Supreme Court rejected that claim. The Bush administration insisted that the detainees there could be held indefinitely without access to lawyers or the opportunity to challenge their convictions in court. The Supreme Court rejected that claim, too. Now, Congress responded to some of these Supreme Court rulings by authorizing detentions, and it's true that President Obama has found it harder to close the camp than he expected because of congressional pushback. But that doesn't change the fact that creating a constitutional no man's land is both constitutionally and morally indefensible and also a terrible way of preventing terrorism and running a justice system.
In our exploration of justice this hour, one of the issues that we will explore is the idea of consensus, that there has to be some sort of collective agreement on what constitutes justice and what constitutes injustice. And we get a lot of commentary on our website in response to the coverage that we do on Guantanamo Bay, and I think a lot of news organizations do as well, that somehow we're biased, that we don't acknowledge the possibility that the inmates at Guantanamo are in fact bad people and that they don't deserve any breaks whatsoever. But I'm thinking that constitutionally, we in America are supposed to agree at a very basic level that whatever we think about the inmates at Guantanamo, what's happening to them is wrong. That's not really a subject of debate in America right now. Yes or no?
Yes. The answer is absolutely yes. Even if we posited that each of the 106 remaining detainees was a dangerous terrorist, I can't think of a plausible argument that they could be held forever without either trial or possibility of reviewing the constitutionality of their detention. The Supreme Court has rejected that claim and said that the very essence of justice is the ability to have some access to challenge the idea that you might be being wrongfully held. But it's not the case that all 166 are dangerous terrorists. By commonly accepted numbers, 24 of the detainees are considered eligible for possibly being prosecuted. There are 86 that have been cleared for transfer or release but are not being released because the administration thinks it's practically difficult to do so, and then 47 who are considered actively dangerous. That's just not fair.
Finally, The judicial history of the United States includes a lot of events that we understand clearly to be injustices down through history. I'm wondering where Guantanamo Bay will stand in that pantheon. Will it be like the Japanese internment cases of the World War II era? Will it be like the Reconstruction decisions that set the stage for the bitterness and the inequalities that motivated the civil rights movement? What do you think?
Those are both strong possibilities for historical analogies. Another one that comes to mind are the red baiting terrorism prosecutions during and after World War I, where suspected anarchists and socialists, including Eugene V. Debs, the socialist candidate for vice president, were prosecuted for their criticisms of the war in the face of fears about terrorism. Those gave rise to the greatest free speech dissents in American history, written by Oliver Wendell Holmes and Louis Brandeis, and came to spawn the American free speech tradition. And perhaps if there's any light that can come out of this sorry episode, it will be some reaffirmation of our constitutional ideals.
The symbolism of Guantanamo Bay and its legacy in the historical judicial history of the United States. Jeffrey Rosen is professor of law at George Washington University Law School. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.